California, June 21st, 1996. Of Marv Grissom in Red Bluff, California. I'm Bob Brigham, Associate Editor of the Diamond Angle, and I'm visiting this morning with Marv Grissom. You fans who are getting up in years will remember Marv's career in the late 1940s and the 1950s, primarily with the New York Giants, but he also wore the uniform of a few other clubs, and we'll talk about that with him. Marv, as I drove up here this morning, I came through Corning, and I believe you have a brother who lives down in Corning. Is that correct?
Yes, he's been down there for several years now, and he'll soon be 89 years old.
That would be Lee, and you and Lee are one of several brother combinations that have left your mark on baseball. The DiMaggios, the Dean brothers, the Grissom brothers, and there are several others.
It's pretty nice to be put into that group. They were a lot more famous than we were.
Well, you had a good career, though, and Lee did, too, although his was shorter than yours. Lee is several years older than you, right?
Yes, that's true. He's 11 years older than
uh-huh.
I am.
And as you were growing up in your young boyhood, you certainly must have been aware of the fact that you had a big brother who was a big league pitcher.
Well, you know, in those days, it really didn't mean that much. We knew that he was playing baseball, but there was very little radio, no TV, stuff like that, and very little in the newspapers in those days. So it really didn't dawn on us until we were later on in our years that this, you know, we were proud of it.
Yes. Well, was Lee an inspiration to you as you were figuring out what you wanted to be and what sports you were good at, or was that threatening to you? Gosh, I have a big brother to live up to here.
Well, no, actually, I had never pitched even in high school. So, one time he told the Cincinnati Reds that he had a brother at home that could throw pretty hard.
Uh-huh.
So they said, "Well, bring him to spring training." Well, I went to spring training, and I spent 5 weeks in Tampa, Florida. And I was sent home at the end of spring training because Warren Giles, who was then the president of the Cincinnati Reds and general manager, didn't think I'd ever amount to anything, so they didn't sign me.
What position had you been playing on your high school teams?
I didn't.
You didn't play baseball?
I didn't play baseball.
Of course, they didn't have Little League in those days, so when you're down 8, 9 years old, you weren't playing organized sports?
Well, no, there was no baseball at all, other than there was some, like, they called it Farm Bureau League in that day, where a bunch of amateurs got together and played Sunday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
But after I got home from that spring training in 38, well, I started to play with the town team here in Red Bluff.
So Red Bluff is your hometown?
That's true. I was born just 8 miles out of Red Bluff.
El Molina?
Los Molinos.
Los Molinos. Okay.
Right.
And now Lee, I noticed in the encyclopedia, he was born down in Texas.
Texas, that's right.
Yeah. Did Mom and Dad let little brother Marvin know why the family moved from Texas out to California?
Well, you know, that's a lot of years ago. My father was from Kentucky and my mother from North Carolina. And as fairly young married people, they migrated from there to Texas,
mm-hmm.
and spent a few years in Texas. And then they came to California.
Mm-hmm.
And there was 9 children in the family, and the last 3 were born in here in Tama County.
Okay. Now, among these 9 siblings, were there any other boys besides you and Lee?
There was 3 other brothers.
Uh-huh.
One older and one in between, and one younger than I. But he was, he pitched in high school and was a pretty good-looking prospect. And he was going to Santa Rosa Junior College, and he was killed in a motorcycle accident.
Oh, my.
when he was 18 years old.
Yeah. So none of those other boys had professional careers, at least not big league careers.
No. Very little amateur also, because my brother that's in between, he hurt his arm trying to play, and it never did develop, so he just stayed with his farming.
I see. Okay. Now, I think we probably already covered this, but let's get back to Lee for just a minute. Since he preceded you in professional baseball and big league baseball, was that a disadvantage to you? Did it put pressure on you, or did it encourage you, or did it have no effect whatsoever?
Well, I don't know that it had that much effect. As far as the pressure was concerned, that's only what you put on yourself.
Uh-huh.
And even through all of my career, I never felt any pressure even playing in New York or San Francisco after they moved out here. So it wasn't that much of a deal.
Okay, okay. I noticed that, I recall that your career started in 1946. That is, as far as your big league baseball was concerned. Did the war come along and delay your entry into professional baseball?
Well, a little bit. I had started 1941 in the California State League. And
Modesto?
That was at San Bernardino.
Okay.
And
they still have, they have a ball club in San Bernardino,
right,
now,
they,
you know.
They do again, uh-huh. Right. But they closed up on the 1st of July in 1941 because they weren't drawing anybody.
Uh-huh.
And it was a farm club of the Hollywood Stars at that time.
Oh, yeah.
And I had hurt my arm early in the season, and it was just starting to come back, but they released me. So I came home and spent about 2 months before I was drafted into the Army, where I was in October 41, I went in, and I got out in it was December of 45.
You were about 23 years old then when you went in?
Right.
Uh-huh.
So I was always the old young rookie.
Okay. Well, there were several other fellows, I imagine, in your category, guys who the war came along and interrupted their careers, and as a consequence, they got into baseball, into big league baseball late in their relatively.
There was a lot of them, and in fact, when I was on the island of Tinney in the Mariana Islands in 45, Johnny Mize was managing a Coast Guard team there.
Uh-huh.
And I had pitched against his team a couple of times. And when he belonged to the Giants at that time,
yes.
And when he was discharged, the Giants asked him if there's anybody he's seen that they might contact and try to sign. So they did. They sent me a letter, and I went to spring training in 1946 on the recommendation of Johnny Mize.
Yes. Uh-huh. Johnny was probably with the Giants during some of those years in the early 50s when you were with the Giants. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he remember you from that wartime experience?
Yeah, but you know, this did not come out until 4 or 5 years later that he recommended me.
Uh-huh.
And I did get a chance to talk to him 2 or 3 times when I was playing and he was around. I finally got to thank him for it.
Yeah, okay. What branch of the service were you in, Mark?
I was in the Army Medical Corps.
I see. Can you recall some other ball players that you played with during the war that later had careers in the big leagues, besides Johnny?
At that time there was some major league teams that was put together to play exhibition games in the islands like that. They flew from island to island and played against each other. Well, we had two of those teams stationed on the island of Tinian.
Uh-huh.
And when I was with spring training with Cincinnati, I happened to become well acquainted with Lou Riggs, who was with them at that time. And he was managing one of those major league teams on the island.
Uh-huh.
So I contacted him, calling on the phone, and talked to him, and they came over on a Sunday afternoon and played against a team that I had on the island. And it was a lot of fun. We got rained out. A cloud came over the island and rained us out in the fifth inning. But they stayed and had dinner with us. And but I can't recall the names on the team that
I've talked with some fellows that are of your era, guys that you might know and recall and perhaps even played with or against. And one of them, Jack Graham. You know Jack? Okay.
Know him well.
All right. Wonderful gentleman.
Right.
And he said he played some service ball up in Utah at an Army facility they had up there. Another fellow, Herm Rich, he was a Coast League ball player and had a year with Cleveland, Washington, Chicago.
I knew Herm.
You know Herm? I talked with him just the other day, and he played some service ball. So I imagine there were literally hundreds of guys that were serious ball players that got a chance to play some baseball during World War II in the service.
Right, there was.
Okay. Now, you were signed out of the Army by the Giants on the recommendation of Johnny Mize. Is that the way it worked?
Right.
Okay. Yep. But then you soon went to Detroit.
No, that was earlier.
Oh, I
well, no, you're right. That was. I signed in 1946 with the Giants.
Okay.
But they had optioned me out, and I had no more options left. So they sold me to Sacramento.
I see.
In the Coast League.
Yes.
As Johnny Aringo was the manager there, and John had played with the Giants, so they worked up the deal.
Okay, all right. Then you played with Sacramento in 1946?
48.
Okay, because the encyclopedia lists you as having been with New York, and I guess you had an 0-2 record in 46.
Yeah, I was right at the end of the season.
Yeah, and then it doesn't show anything until 49 when you were with Detroit, and in the interim, you were playing Pacific Coast League baseball, AAA.
Right.
I got it. Okay. Now, under what circumstances then did you end up with Detroit in a Tiger uniform? You've been playing in the Pacific Coast League.
That was 1948, right?
Yeah.
And I had a pretty good year with the last place ball club. I was 11-7 as a starter and was having pretty good success, and Detroit drafted me from the Solons that year.
Yes.
For 49.
Okay.
But most of my career, I've always been a kind of a slow starter in the spring.
Yes.
And I had a couple of chances with Detroit early, and it didn't pan out, so they didn't use me very much from then on. So
then in 50 and 51, you were back down in the Coast League.
No, in 1950, I went to the American Association at Toledo, which was a farm club of Detroit.
And that's AAA also.
Right. And Detroit did not recall my contract at the end of the year, so they made a deal with Seattle for me to go there.
I see.
Which I did. I had a good year there. I was 20-11, and the White Sox kind of worked with Seattle in those years. And I went to Chicago then for 1952 season.
Yes. Okay. And then 53 over to Boston. Over
right.
The Red Sox.
Well, yeah, I was traded to the Red Sox. There was Monty Kennedy, Skinny Brown and Bill Kennedy and myself traded to the Red Sox for Vern Stevens.
Okay. Before we get too far away from the Coast League, I want to talk with you a little bit about that. I've heard a lot of people say that the baseball played in the AAA Pacific Coast League of that era was almost on the same caliber as Major League Baseball.
It was very close. there it was a pretty good mixture of young guys on their way up,
yeah,
and the ones that on their way down,
uh-huh.
And some of them had played in the major leagues and played pretty good, but they just didn't quite have enough to be able to stay there,
mm-hmm.
And it made a pretty good combination.
And how about salaries? Were they just a notch below big league salaries?
Well, probably some of them was probably making more than.
I've heard ballplayers say that.
Yeah, yeah, it if you did the job in the Coast League and they paid you pretty well for it.
Okay. Now we're up to 1954, and you begin perhaps the most significant part of your career, several years with the New York Giants.
Right.
Uh-huh.
They, you know, they, Boston put me on waivers in July of 53, and the Giants, they claimed me. And I spent the second half of 53 with the Giants in New York. And I started and relieved both. But the big reason for the year I had in 54 was due to the fact that the Giants took a trip to Japan after the World Series that year of, mm-hmm. in 53.
Yes.
And we spent 6 weeks playing 12 of the games. We played 20 games on the trip, but we played 12 of them in Japan. And DeRocher, the manager of the Giants, we only had 6 pitchers on the trip. And a couple of times, I pitched good over there, too. I think I won 6 or 7 games on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of times, DeRocher needed somebody to pitch the one inning because the game was we were behind a run. And so he would look down the bench, and the other guys were looking the other way, and I just nodded my head. Yeah, I'll pitch another inning. So he would just nod his head. And then I think that gave him confidence in mm-hmm. I wanted to pitch, and so he started using me in 1954.
Now, this postseason play would have been in October and November?
It was latter part uh-huh. of October and November,
yeah.
Right.
Which is significant because you said a few minutes ago that you tended to be a slow starter. You didn't pitch as well in the spring and in the early part of the season as you did in the later part of the season.
That was mostly true.
Yeah, so now we have you pitching in October and November when you're probably at your best.
Well, and I was also at the right age, and my stuff, I had control of it. So everything come together right at that same time.
There was a fellow, I've done quite a bit of research on this guy and some writing on him. And I'm not sure that he was with the Giants during the time you were there. Jack Lorke, an infielder.
I know Jack.
Did you?
Yes.
Were you wearing a Giant uniform at the same time he was, or had he moved on to Pittsburgh, I believe it was, at that time?
He had moved on because I was in spring training with him, then optioned out.
Okay.
So and when I came back to the Giants, he had already he was gone.
Yeah, and you probably played with him or against him in the Pacific Coast League because he spent several years before his big league career and after his big league career in the Coast League, I believe.
Well, don't quote me, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you guys come and go, and your paths cross and recross. The interesting thing about Lorke, we'll spend a minute on this, and then we'll go back to your career. You perhaps remember or were aware of that terrible bus accident in the state of Washington in 46.
Right.
And he was playing with the Spokane Indians at the time. That was the Western International League, which was Class A ball. And the San Diego Padres, who I guess had a working agreement with the Indians, their general manager called this restaurant in Ellensburg, Washington, where he knew the team would be stopping for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he left a message at the restaurant, take Lorke off the bus. We need him down in San Diego. Lorke got off the bus and hitchhiked back to Spokane to get his clothes and things. The bus heads north for Bremerton, and about 45 minutes out of Ellensburg, they go over this embankment, and eight of the guys were killed, and that's why they called him Lucky Lorkey after that.
Right.
Yeah, I think he's still living. He's living in San Jose. Now, I want to ask you how you liked pitching in the Polo Grounds, which had probably one of the most unusual configurations of any big league baseball field that we've ever had.
Well, at the same time I was there, it just happened that we had the center fielder that could play that position.
Yeah.
And it was with Willie Mays in center field. If you didn't let the hitters pull the ball or hit the right field, the opposite field, right or left, either one, it was very short.
Yes.
Just throw it down the middle, might have hit it to center field. Well, Willie would catch it for you.
Okay.
You try to keep it in the park, and there was no worry.
Yeah, there was that one famous play, I guess, where he caught that ball hit by Vic Wertz in the World Series.
Right.
Did you happen to be on the mound at that time, by any chance?
No. Don Little, a left-handed pitcher, was pitching at that time.
Uh-huh.
But I was only about 85 or 90 feet from where Willie caught the ball.
Uh-huh.
Because the bullpen was in the Polo, and the Polo Grounds was right down there in right center field.
Yeah.
So we was very close to the catch, and I was warming up to get ready to go into the game at that time.
Uh-huh. Okay. How did you feel, Marv, about the Giants relocating in California, back in your home state?
Well, I loved it.
Uh-huh.
I was able to stay with the Giants in 1958, the year they moved out here.
Yeah.
And I would get home on off days and be able to go fishing or relax. And it was only a four-hour drive one way in those days to the ballpark. So, no, I thoroughly enjoyed the year here. I was bothered a little bit about tickets, but other than that, it wasn't bad at all.
So are you saying that you made your home in Red Bluff during your Giant years in San Francisco?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You didn't
have a place down in San Francisco?
No,
where you stayed?
I just stayed in a motel down there.
Uh-huh.
And my wife would come down on some of the home stands, or I would come up here.
Uh-huh.
So it worked out very well.
Yeah. Being a pitcher, would they let you take a day or two off and stay up here in Red Bluff after a pitching assignment?
Not in relief, you don't.
Yeah, that's right. They want you there available.
You're there every day.
Sure. So most of your career, you weren't a starter.
No, most of my career, about 50% early in my career, until I came to the Giants in 1954, I was a starter.
Okay.
And in 1954, well, we had a pretty good pitching staff, and Hoyt Wilhelm was the main man in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And I had done a little of relieving in 53, and in first game of 54, I went in and saved it for Sal Magley. I pitched 2 1/3, I think, innings against the Dodgers and saved it for Magley. And shortly after that, the starting rotation settled in pretty good, so I asked to be sent to the bullpen because they needed more help there than they did as starters.
Uh-huh.
But and that's where I went. But there was, I think, two or three games after, from the middle of the inning on, or middle of the year on, that we needed an extra starter. So he took me out of the bullpen, and I started, I think it was three games the rest of the year.
Were you in that ball game by any chance where Bobby Thompson hit that home run?
No, that was 1951. That was the year I was at Seattle.
Oh, yeah, okay. You said early on in this interview, Marv, that when you were a boy, baseball was not as big a deal in terms of the massive publicity and exposure that it gets on radio and television and in the print media. Nevertheless, can you think back to ball players that were big in the early 30s and in the 30s that you particularly admired?
No, that baseball was the furthest thing from my mind in those years. My brother would bring some gloves home or baseballs, and my younger brother and I would get out in the yard there and throw back and forth, but that was as close to baseball as we got.
Yeah.
And there was very little written in the paper. Maybe when Lee pitched a game or something, there'd be a little bit of an article in there, but it didn't even dawn on me.
You were more interested in just playing the game and enjoying the game than you were in being a fan of big league baseball.
Well, there was very few games that I was good enough to get in. So I played softball mostly.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I did that about 3 times a week.
Now, how about your peers, players that whose careers were contemporary to yours? Do you have any that you particularly admired? Ball players that were playing with you and against you?
You have respect for several of them as opponents.
Yes.
And I there was some that I was friendly with, but as far as staying in contact, would never have.
Who'd you consider your toughest out? Do you think back on a particular batter?
Well, sure. There was two, and Junior Gilliam with the Dodgers was a tough out for me because he didn't swing the bat. He just hit the ball where it was pitched.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was Stan Musial.
Okay.
He hit me pretty good. I don't know what his average was, but I helped him get where he was today.
Okay. Musial was left-handed.
Right.
There, and Gilliam, as I recall, he switched. So
he always
went up left-handed against
right.
you.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And as is the case, you had more difficulty with left-handers than with right-handers.
Well, not really. I would rather pitch against left-handed hitters in those years than I did right-handers.
Uh-huh.
Because I had developed a screwball.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked very well for me against left-handed hitters. And I've been trying to think back, and I cannot remember a screwball that was hit for a home run off of.
Uh-huh.
And it got to working so well that I started throwing it to right-handed hitters.
Oh, breaking in on them.
Right.
Do you feel that pitch might have taken a year or two off your career? I understand that's hard on the arm.
I think it added to mine.
Okay.
If I hadn't had the screwball, I don't think that I would have been as good a relief pitcher as I was.
Uh-huh.
But it compensated against the left-handed hitter
sure.
for me very well.
I see. Now let's turn that question around. Were there any really good hitters that you faced year in and year out that you didn't have much trouble with?
Well, as far as hitters are concerned, they all got their base hits off of you.
Yeah.
You tried to keep them from getting their hits whenever there was men on. But as a team, I always felt that I had real good success against the Phillies, Philadelphia. And I was, every time we went there or they came to the Polo Grounds, I was tickled to death because... Well, with the success that I had against that particular team.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they had some pretty good hitters on the club. Richie Ashburn, Pudd'nhead Jones, Del Ennis.
Yes.
So there were no pushovers, but I just had good luck against
uh-huh,
them.
Let's talk about managers for a minute, if you're willing to. Do you have a favorite manager among all the men you played for?
Well, I think that anytime you have success, he is probably your favorite manager because he's used you and you did well with him.
Would that be DeRocher then?
I've always admired DeRocher, and even though I played for Bill Rigney,
uh-huh.
and after DeRocher, and I liked him as a manager.
Uh-huh.
But I think that I had more success with DeRocher, so. If I had to pick one, well, he would be the number one.
Now, Marv, are you willing to tell us a manager you didn't like?
Well, there was one that I didn't particularly care for. He managed a minor league club for the Giants.
Uh-huh.
And he was so high strung that he couldn't stand bases on balls. And, of course, in those years, I was wild.
Uh-huh.
So, naturally, we had a lot of arguments back and forth about pitching. But I didn't hate him. It's just that I didn't get along
with
him.
Would he be a name that fans recognize?
No.
Uh-huh. He hadn't been a big league ball player, and...
No.
Okay.
I've never played for a manager in the major leagues that I didn't get along well with.
Okay. I have just a couple more questions. Do you look back on any particular game or play that you would consider to be the highlight of your career?
Well, actually, I had about three games that I would almost on the equal.
Uh-huh.
And that was the opening day of 1954 when I saved the game for Magley. There was 55,000 people in the Polo Grounds, and there were about 50-50 in New York for the Giants and the other for the Dodgers.
Uh-huh.
And that was on a Tuesday. The following Saturday, I started against the Phillies in New York and beat them 1-0. And that was one of the best games I think I ever pitched, complete game in the major leagues.
Uh-huh.
And the other highlight was the first game of the 1954 World Series. I came in and pitched after Vic Wirtz and Willie Mays' great catch. I came in and pitched 2 1/3 innings until Dusty Rhodes hit the home run, and we won the first game.
Well, Marv, you've taken us through your career very nicely here, I think. Can we talk for a minute or two about what you have done since you left baseball?
Well, after I retired as a player, I went to St. Louis in 59, and I hurt my back in spring training, and it never responded, so I retired in June of 59 from the Cardinals. And we had sold our home, planning on building a new one that fall. Well, the home was sold, and I retired early, so we lived in a trailer for about 3 months, and we started this home here now. Mm-hmm. We've been here since we moved in 1959 in this place.
Uh-huh.
So it's about 37 years old.
So it's a beautiful home, and I would never guess that it was that old. Did you stay in baseball as a scout? Did you ever manage?
Okay, well, I didn't do anything. I tried to managing the service station for a year, and all at once Bill Rigney called me about coaching for the Angels when they started in 1961.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So I went to coaching, and I coached for the Angels three different times, and I was down there 9 years altogether.
You worked with his pitchers?
Pitchers,
uh-huh.
Right. And then I was a pitching coach at Chicago, White Sox, Cubs, and Minnesota. So
uh-huh.
I've got about 15 or 16 years in after I quit playing as a coach.
Now, during that time with the Angels, I'm thinking back and remembering who they had as pitchers. Bo Bolinski comes to mind, of course.
Bo Bolinski, Dean Chance.
Dean Chance is the other one I was trying to think of. He probably was the best pitcher during that era as far as the Angels were concerned.
Well, at that time, also, we had Andy Messersmith, too, time.
Uh-huh.
And before the reserve clause was broken and he left.
And he was one of the ones instrumental in breaking that reserve clause,
right,
as I recall.
That's right.
Yeah.
There was, you know, it doesn't come to mind right
uh-huh.
away, but well, we had Ned Garver and Tom Morgan.
Yes.
A couple of old-timers that joined us.
Fowler.
Art Fowler.
Art Fowler.
Well, we had Ryan Duren.
Ryan Duren.
Tex Clevenger.
Tex Clevenger, I knew at Fresno State. Is this your golf partner?
No, that's my brother.
Oh, that's a bonus. I'll get a chance to see Lee, too.
No, this is the
Lee.
Other one.
Oh, okay. You want me to cut this off so you can greet him?
You go ahead and cut it off any way you want.
Okay.
Just keep going. He'll come in.
Yeah. We were talking about Texas.
Come on in.
Oh, Ryan Duren. I used to enjoy watching him pitch more than any other pitcher, I think. He had those thick lenses in his glasses. Morning.
Hi.
I'm interviewing your brother here, and I'll be through in just a few minutes. Are you his golf partner?
No.
I'm his farming partner.
Oh, okay. All right. And I can remember distinctly one time, this was at the old Wrigley Field, the old Pacific Coast League ballpark, before the Angels moved over to Dodger Stadium, which they like to call Chavez Ravine.
Yeah.
And Duren had that way of, when he was warming up, I don't know whether he did it on purpose or accidentally, but he'd throw a ball about 2 feet over the catcher's head with a lot on it, and it would stick in the screen.
Yeah.
And it kind of intimidated the batters.
Well, he did that a few times. He did it for show.
Uh-huh.
He's that kind of a guy. But he could throw hard, and those glasses, they were like the bottom of a Coke bottle.
That's what I recall. And I read recently that Ryan doesn't drink anymore, and he's actually a alcohol counselor.
Last I knew, I'd seen him. Just in Wisconsin, out of Milwaukee.
Yes, uh-huh.
He was working with a young group up there and had been for years. I guess he's still doing it. And from what I hear, he's straightened out and doing real well.
Yeah, that's great. So after you finished your baseball coaching with the Angels and several other ball clubs that you mentioned, and you got out of baseball, did you go into farming, or did you just, you'd worked hard, maybe you just took it easy?
You see this easy chair? This is what I've done.
Worked on your golf game and your reading and things like that.
Oh, I like to hunt, fish, and play golf.
That's wonderful.
And that takes up my time. We have our own home garden and we grow vegetables. Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah. Well, Marv, it's been a pleasure visiting with you, and I really appreciate the time you've given me. And I'm going to get out of here so you can go out and hit that little white ball.
Yeah, I haven't got much time.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.